if you're in sales and if you're in customer service, never give a client what they ask for. That's called a transaction. And if you start doing that, Amazon's building an algorithm that's going to put you out of business.
Hello, everybody. It's Jake Senzio, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, with my co-host, a multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, father, six, best-selling author, the G-Daddy. Gino Barbagino, how's it going?
Jake, doing great today. Looking All forward right. to another amazing guest on the show. How you doing?
Always making it happen, big man. Today's guest has been described as the real-life Wizard of Oz by Forbes magazine. He is the best-selling author of Blue Fishing, The Art of Making It Happen. Steve, we're going to talk about this in a second. His direct results-oriented approach makes him a coveted coach and speaker. So without further ado, Steve Sims, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. My first question is, do you know what my license plate says? You don't have a fucking clue what my license plate says.
Not a clue.
It says M-I-H. Make it happen. We are make it happen blood brothers, my friend. So I love the subtitle of the book. It's how we live our life. Let's get this sucker kicked off. Tell us a little bit about your business history and your story.
Let's go either way. I founded a luxury concierge firm that had me chatting with the Pope and Elon Musk and Richard Branson, but it all stemmed from me being kicked out of school at the age of 15, working for my parents' construction firm. And like all entrepreneurs, just having that gut feeling that something wasn't right. This was back in the 80s. I'm no spring chicken. I'm 55. So I grew up in a period where I didn't have the pleasure of Instagram to tell me how inadequate my life was. So it was just a gut reaction. It's got to be something better for me. And I went out and tried to find it.
Oh, my God. He figured it out without Instagram. Gino, the show's over. Point made. We're done.
I don't even know where to go. That's just bricklayer. How'd you become a bricklayer? Why bricklayer?
Well, my dad, look, I come from an Irish family. So everyone in our family was, bricklayers. And actually, that's a really powerful story because when I was thrown out of school, the only place I could go was my dad's construction firm. And my dad had me working on the site one day, lifting around bricks on what was called a hod, which was this weird contraption, like a V. You put it on your shoulder and you could hold like a dozen or more bricks. And I climbed up the ladder. And when I got to the top of the ladder, my dad was there. Next to him was my uncle that was slightly younger. Then my cousins, who at the time was like 19 and one was 24. And then my granddad, who was in his 80s. I literally saw my family future. I saw my lifeline. And it scared the shit out of me. And a true story from this was I was so shocked that I saw my future that when I went down to the tea hut, I ran up to my granddad and like an idiot, I'm like 16 years old. And I was like, granddad, did you think you'd be doing this when you are this old? Now, quite simply, that's a very insulting question. I should have got smacked in the mouth. I should point out, he was 7'1". He was a monster of an Irish man. He didn't even look at me, but he said, if you don't quit today, you'll be me tomorrow.
Ooh. Yeah, that hit. He didn't need to punch you. He hit you in the gut.
That hit me so hard. I came out of that that caravan, and I ran up to my dad. My dad hated being called dad on the building site. But I was so consumed with what my granddad was saying. I was like, dad, come here, dad. And he was like, what? Shut up. What do you want? And I went, dad, I went up there and I saw you and I saw my uncle and I saw my boys and my granddad. And I asked him and he said, if you don't quit today, you'll be me. I've got to quit now. And my dad looked at me. Now, here's the funny thing.
No, you didn't really quit, did you?
I had to. I'm 6 foot tall, 240 pound of ugly. My dad is like 5'5". My granddad's 7 foot. So my dad lost out on the height gene pool. And my dad looked at me and then literally my granddad walked behind me. And when my granddad walks behind you, you know.
He's the mountain.
Yeah, it's like a solar eclipse. The daft thing is my dad looked up to me, looked further up to see him. They nodded at each other. And my dad said, you finish Friday. Now, not to give you a dampener on that, My granddad died very shortly after that, and he never got to see what he ignited. The journey. Had I not seen him on that site, had he not been that transparent and blunt with me, I may have settled. I may have put up with it. I may have listened to all the other assholes on the bar stool, but I didn't, and it was all down to him.
But Steve, why were you not a good student? It seems as if the recurring theme on our show, every time we have entrepreneurs on, the majority of them really didn't like school. I mean, on the guy in green over there, he was a terrible student, and he went and he did those jobs.
They told me I shouldn't have gone to college.
Nah, no, you're wrong. You're one, look, it's your show, so I don't want to call you out, but you're wrong.
Dude, call us out, man. We need that's a little, here little, for, little jam and fun in this sucker.
Yeah, it's bollocks. It wasn't a case of you were a bad student. You just had bad teachers. Let's be blunt. We love to learn.
Oh, man, we're punting on that, though, right?
Yeah, we're always out there. How can I do this? How can I try? We're the kids that pull the TV apart to see what's inside it, and then we can't put it back together again. So I would say that we're exceptional students. We just have to search for the appropriate teachers.
The appropriate medium. I'm not putting it on the teachers. I'm calling bullshit on that because these teachers were doing what they're instructed to do. I think it's more of a conformity and a system issue versus the people themselves. Ultimately, yeah, because I'm not putting it on them. It was on me. I wasn't going to, you know, get put in that box and do it. But ultimately, it was just not a medium that I was going to get education from and get in line. And, you know, I bucked it. So I think it's, you know, to Gino's point, everyone learns a little bit differently, but it's also that same reason why we step outside the norm and we create things on our own. So it's just, you know,
would you want to be a teacher?
Chemicals. I went to school. So this is the bullshit. I went to school to be a gym teacher. I finally got in. I went to JUCO school. This is what happened. I grew up in a little ass town. I went to JUCO college because I couldn't get in regular school. Did good. Then went to the bigger school and I was going to be a gym teacher. And I looked at my dad and I said, I'm a glorified babysitter. I can't go through with this. So I stopped in my senior year and I got it. I went out and got into sales, which I never heard of growing up in this small little shit town. But and then it went from there. But yeah, no, I thought I did.
Teachers, it's a tough job. I don't want to feel as though I'm being disrespectful to teachers. They have to teach the mass syllabus.
Yeah.
But not everyone, as you say, learns at the same pace or in the same direction.
No, they could. I was considered like an idiot. You know, but maybe whatever. Maybe
it may still be. There may still be people out there. Who knows?
So from bricklayer to bouncer. How did you go from bricklayer to bouncer? Tell us that journey. So
I knew what it was like to be poor because I was poor and it sucked. So I wanted to hang out where rich people hang out because quite simply, I was getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I was going home at 8 o'clock in the night, all beaten up, wet, damp from being on the building site. So I knew how to work hard. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't making any money. So I wanted to find rich people. And quite simply, it's the Irish kid in me. I wanted to go, how come you're rich and I'm not? So I
great question.
So I tried applying for jobs that were in a world of affluence. So yacht charters, jet charters, limousine drivers, you know, all of these kind of things to try and get around rich people. But rich people don't really pay attention to those people, you know, because they're nothing more than glorified salespeople. You know, there's no one that sells a jet that owns a jet. You know, that kind of thing. So quite simply, and also, let's be blunt. I'm not the kind of guy you want knocking on your door. You know, I'm that kind. So I failed at all of those and I got fired. And eventually I even got a job in Hong Kong because I was really, you know, trying to stretch out as to where this affluence was. I failed at that job and I ended up getting a job because I was at the bar. Because they were having trouble with a couple of fellas, the bar lady that owned the bar said to me, you get them out, I'll pay for your drinks. And I was so broke, so down on my luck, that I was even planning that night to drink myself stupid and then do a run-up because I didn't have enough money to pay the bar tab.
What's a run-up?
You know, where you kind of like drink your drink, you tell them to get the bill, they walk off, and then you run away.
Man, I've learned it every day. I learn something on this show, Gino. Time I'm with my wife and we don't like the food, we're going to pull a run-up, all right?
So I was in that position. But when she offered me a chance to get out of it, even though it may have meant I got into a fight, which I didn't really care about, I just thought, I'll take that, you know, and then I'll come back tomorrow and do a run-up. I got the job as a doorman. And the funny thing about entrepreneurs, We get to see through the shit. We look for the opportunity. We look to see, in the words of Sean Stevenson, is it done for us or to us? And as entrepreneurs, we try to see the for us attitude. Richest guy on a rainy day is the guy selling the umbrellas. How could I make me, working as a doorman of a nightclub, how can I make it work for me? And the funny thing is, it gave me a pedestal to see people. I saw the flakes of the world pretending that they were rich, and I saw the real people that were rich. And I used to stand on the door, and I used to play the game. Okay, what is this crew coming for? Is it celebrating a job? Is it old friends getting together? And so it was a great point of visual for me to see humanity and how they interacted. And from the funny thing is, from there, that place gave me my best lessons in order to launch what ended up becoming the largest, most successful concierge firm in the planet.
Let's dive into some of those lessons, because that's what, you know, people are here for. The entrepreneurial journey is sometimes lonely. They don't know how to start. I mean, how much lonelier is it than laying brick with your family and then becoming a doorman? And then all of a sudden you have this idea, and it seems as if you're chasing opportunity. You're not just chasing money. That's the great thing with entrepreneurs. We're not just going for the next buck unless we're really broke and doing a run-up, but that's not ultimately where we end up. We end up wanting to chase that opportunity because we know opportunity ultimately leads to, you know, more dollars and more impact. So give me a couple of those lessons that you learned that helped you start out your company.
That's beautifully said. That really, anyone listening to this podcast, I take my hat, so well framed. The trouble is, entrepreneurs, we feel as though we don't fit in. It's not until we actually start becoming somewhat successful or hanging out in rooms of other entrepreneurs that we realized we were never designed to. We were designed to stand out. We were designed to disrupt. And when you realize that, when you realize that you're not supposed to settle in and be like the rest of the people in the coffee shop, that you are something different, you look different, you think different, you act different. And that's the key. You actually action it. You don't sit there whinging in your cappuccino going, oh, I wish. You do shit about it. When you realize that you're that person, it makes you a lot happier. And for me, I wanted to get in front of these people. And I realized, as the doorman, I knew where all the nightclubs were. I knew where all the celebrities were turning up. I could then start selecting the richer people in my bar and going, hey, I can get you into here. Is this something you want to do? And they'd be like, yeah, how do you do it? And I'd be like, look, $500 and I'll get you in. And I started charging very, very early on. And I became the Google of nightlife. Then I started throwing my own parties in penthouses, yachts. Then I started throwing parties at events like Monaco Grand Prix, Cannes Film Festival, and ended up working for like the Grammys, Sir Elton John's Oscar party, New York Fashion Week, Kentucky Derby. But, and here's the big but, the only reason I did it was to surround myself with rich people and to literally walk up to them, and this was a stupid question, say to them, hey, Johnny, are you enjoying it? Oh, this is great, Steve. Hey, I've got a question for you. How come you're rich and I'm not? And I would literally ask that question. Bad question. Okay? The reason it's a bad question is if I ask you how rich you are, you suddenly start thinking about finance. You start thinking about the dollar symbol. How rich am I? Well, this is how much I've got in my bank. You go there. Mm-hmm. So I realized I was getting the wrong answers. And also people, if I say to you, you know, what religion you are, you know, how much money you got in your bank account, you'll probably tell me your religion before you tell me how much money's in your bank account. Okay. People don't like talking about how much money they got. So it was a bad question. So I've always thought, if you get the wrong answer, if you get an answer you don't like, it's because you're asking the wrong question. So I changed the question. Hey, how come you're wealthy and I'm not? That's an okay question, but it still gave me a bad answer, because now people talk about wealth. They talk about their family, their religion, their peace, the fact that they met a beautiful partner that supported them. I'm not going to be able to marry your partner. So that shit doesn't help me. So again, it was the wrong question. Third time I started asking, how come you're successful and I'm not? Now that encapsulates everything. And I literally, my wife always said I'm a 55-year-old, 5-year-old. I will still today walk up to people like Elon Musk, Richard Branson, Jean-Paul DeJuria, and I've asked them all these questions. How come you're successful and so many people are not? And it comes down to three things. three things. There's no course on this shit. I'm not trying to sell it, but for Christ's sake, please use it. There are three reasons why those people are successful and maybe you're not. The first one, they value time differently to you. They know they can make more money. They know they can make more impact, but they know they can't make more time. So when you talk to someone that's successful, they talk to you and they go, hey, Gino, what are you working on? What impact are you trying to create? They don't care what you watched on Netflix. They don't care what's in your coffee. They want to know, what are you working on and why do you think you can pull it off? It's almost like being grilled.
What kind of answer do you get? Like, you've spoke to all these guys. Like, what kind of answer that allowed you to siphon this down to time is one of the, give me a typical answer, like what these guys would say.
I would say, why are you successful and so many people are not? And they would literally say things to me like, why are you asking that? What are you trying to gain from that? You know, they would come. It's almost like a grilling
kind
of interaction. And I suddenly realized it's because they wanted to know what the point was. They didn't have
to get to the root. Yeah, let me get to the point of the fucking question.
That's
right?
What
yeah.
they do. Yeah. They want to know, why are you there? Are you going to do something with it, or are you wasting my time because I don't have much? And so the first thing is, they value time differently to you. When COVID struck, there were those people that went on the couch and went, right, what am I going to binge watch on Netflix? And then there were people that went down and go, okay, how am I going to clean my garage? How am I going to tidy up my business? What can I do about my website? What? And they started focusing on what was going to create impact when COVID was over. It shouldn't be a surprise that COVID has actually produced a lot of millionaires, because people have gone out there and gone, okay, how can I make this time work for me, not against me? So time is the first thing. They value time differently. Second thing, have you ever heard the old thing where rich people turn around, they go, let's do lunch. You know, let's play golf. Let's go and grab a drink and discuss that. And you think to yourself, oh, that's what rich people do. You know, let's do lunch. That's for rich people. The reason they do that is because they want to partner or hire on culture rather than a resume. Let's be blunt. Most of us have lied on our resume. I know I've created better works than Harry Potter on my resumes. But when they meet people, they know that they can get you trained. I could send you on a 6-week course and get you trained on something. But if you're not the same vision, the same culture, the same mindset to the end goal, you can't train that. So people recruit on culture in their partnerships and people they get into their world. First one's time. Second one is culture. Third one, they lean into failure. And this is a big one. When something goes wrong for affluent people, for successful people, they lean into, okay, where did that trip me up? Where did it go wrong? Because nothing all goes wrong. It's one element or maybe a few elements that make it not give you the result you want. So they lean in to find those elements. Unsuccessful people physically lean back, hold their head and go, oh shit, I've lost 10 grand. Wife's going to kill me. Oh my God, what am I going to do with my life? And the following day, they're flipping burgers in McDonald's. Successful people lean into failure for the education, because you don't get education from success on success on success. You get education when shit don't go right. That's where the growth is. So those are the three things that I've got from the most powerful people in the planet and what I teach my coaching clients.
This is awesome, Steve. I want to ask you a question about building your business. And this is something that's controversial that, you know, I think Jake every now and again agrees or disagrees. Was it your passion? Would you tell entrepreneurs to follow your passion to build a business, or is it, or are you just out there trying to solve a problem in the marketplace? Because Jake says BS. It's not your passion. Because like I said, he was a gym teacher. He wanted to help people with personal fitness, and he ended up getting burned out. He hated it. Then he found multifamily.
No, I liked working out.
Yes,
I just liked working out. So I was like, oh, I got to follow my passion. So I'm going to go be a gym teacher. And it was an extenuation of the babysitting bullshit, because people be going, I don't want to do this sit up. I don't want to do it. I'm saying, I don't want to fucking tell you to do it anymore. I like, so good. You know what? That's a wrap. We're done. And that's, you know, I got out of that too.
What are your thoughts on that? For someone who's an entrepreneur trying to start a business, should they go with their passion? Should they go with something they're good at? Where do they start? Where did you start? It seemed like you enjoyed what you were doing. You were connecting people. You saw a way to monetize it. And you saw an even bigger plan. You were more of a visionary.
Andy was partying. Then a partying, right?
So if I was doing what I was passionate about, I'd be riding around on motorcycles drinking whiskey every day. Okay, because that's what I'm passionate about.
That sounds like that might be a little self-destructive.
Recipe for disaster.
It wouldn't go well. I like what I do now because I've discovered it. But here's the funny thing. I don't like parties. I've been on every red and white carpet in the planet, and I fucking hate those things. Okay.
How do you dress when you go to those? Like, you got, like, for the folks that are not on YouTube, he's got a black shirt on and a really sick goatee. What's the ensemble when you're on the red carpet to give folks a visual here?
So I'm very fortunate in the fact that I've become known as the guy that wears a black t-shirt, Vans, and black jeans.
Okay.
So I actually get a lot of events now that go, "Hey, Steve, you know, be you," and I'm good with that. But like, if Elton John, like, I worked for Elton John for 8 years, his event was always a tuxedo. But here's the funny thing. Vans made me a pair of leather sneakers so I could wear leather Vans with my tuxedo.
There you go.
So I always try to retain the Sims there. But I didn't like those events. And I want to focus on what Gina was there for. I was trying to find the solution to my problem by helping people fix theirs. So in the early stages, my affluent clients wanted to go to a better party, wanted to meet celebrities. I didn't give a shit about them. But I did give a shit about giving them what they needed, so I had their attention. My job was a complete Trojan horse. It was only there to sort out your problem, so you would now give me 2 hours of your time and converse with me so I could get in and find out, what are you doing that other people are not? And in the early stages, why are you something that I'm not? And then if you got someone giving you that information, you act on it, and all of a sudden, you're the one flying around in private jets. You're the one that's turning up in Monaco hotels.
We got to shut this down for a second. I need a story. You've been in too many places with too many celebrities. I need like the, what's like the all-time classic story? And if you can name drop, that'd be even cooler, but I understand if you can't.
So I can't name drop on this one.
Can you like frame it up so we can like at least like, you know, pretend we might know
who
it
is. One of the most affluent people in Poland. Okay. Very, very, continue with a very powerful man. And in some ways, maybe a little bit scary to some. We'll leave it at that. Okay. But he actually asked me that he wanted to have dinner in Florence. And he wanted a great dining experience because he was with his fiance and his mother-in-law and father-in-law. I've always believed if you're in sales and if you're in customer service, never give a client what they ask for. That's called a transaction. And if you start doing that, Amazon's building an algorithm that's going to put you out of business. So listen to what people ask you for and then discover what it is they desire and lust for, which is usually different. This guy wanted to show off how connected and powerful he was. So I shut down the Accademia di Galleria Museum in Florence, which is very famous because it's the only museum that houses Michelangelo's work outside of Rome. Yeah. And it's the place that houses Michelangelo's David.
Yeah.
Please. So I shut down the museum from 3 o'clock in the afternoon, a public museum, from 3 p.m. in the afternoon till 2 a.m. in the morning, set up a table of six at the feet of Michelangelo's David, picked up the clients, brought them over there. They walked into their own museum, the most scenic view they could get. And then while they were eating their pasta, I asked permission to bring in a local entertainer that would serenade them during that pasta. The client nodded and said, "Of course." And I walked in with Andrea Bocelli to serenade him while he was eating his food. That's the kind of stuff that I did.
That's pretty gangster, Gino.
It's pretty cool. I've got to admit, that's pretty cool. I've got it to some serious.
What did that one, what was the bill on that one?
A significant amount of money, that's for sure.
Yeah, what was the bill on that one?
A semi-nice house in Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that is amazing. That's creating impact. That's creating, you know, our memories. It's all we can take back. The quality of your memories in your life is what we're left with. So do you think he's going to look back and go, "Wow, I've been in that museum, that Pietà," you look at that thing, it's like, "Holy crap, how the hell did somebody..." That must
be. Well, and the guests were just blown away. They'd never experienced something like that and probably never will.
Well, they didn't even know they were going. They thought they were going to go to a nice restaurant and maybe have the chef come out and pamper them at their table to make them look like big shots. And I put him in his complete own environment that no one could ever replicate.
Is that the definition of under-promising and over-delivering? I think that would be the ultimate definition right there, bro.
I think it's there. Yeah, I think
how do you collect on something like that? Because it's a surprise. He doesn't know what he's getting. And you just, you like, did you have to mortgage something to get that paid for? Were you like, dude, just open me up like $1 million right now? Cause like, how does that work? I'm sorry. I'm going like granular with this.
Credibility every single time. If I come to you, like bearing in mind, you can't do this on a one whack. So you can't meet a client and go, hey, wire me 1.5 and I'll make something happen. Cause they're going to be like, what? So you build it up. So he had got to a position where he knew that he was never paying for what he thought he was going to get. He was paying for what he got, and that was always good for him. So I've always worked on the credibility. That's what pisses me off about influencers today. Influencers lean up against a car that they rented from fucking Hertz 10 minutes ago, and they think that's going to give them credibility. A friend of mine said to me that no one that owns a jet has ever taken a selfie on it. You know, that kind of stuff irritates me when it's all over Instagram. And when kids today are asked what they want to be when they grow up, and they literally say an influencer. You know, it's ridiculous. I focus on following achievers. I focus on a credibility metrics. I focus on people that have actually fallen over. I don't want to learn about being rich from a freaking trust fund kid. I want to learn about being rich from a guy that went bankrupt a couple of times and is now a multimillionaire. That's the guy with all the information and knowledge that I need.
Love that.
All right.
Give me a story about when you were leaning in. One of those times when you came up against it and it's like, holy crap, I just lost X amount of money or I just made a big mistake in my business. And what did you do?
Trusted me eyeballs. and that's actually very, very true. I trusted my eyeballs. You can very today, and it goes back to the influencer world, but today we look at someone, we look at their watch, we look at the car, we look at their partner, and our eyes are going click, 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 click. Does this add up? Wow, that person's wealthy. That person's successful. I'll trust him. And we actually trust and believe with our eyes. I got into a gig here in Hollywood, big surprise, with some famous people, getting involved in a deal. The deal was going to cost me like $250,000, but I was going to make 5X that. And I would have all these celebrities with me that all of a sudden I would be known as the guy with, and I won't mention them. One of the reasons why is because I got freaking sued. But you know, there was all these celebrities I was with. And I was like, it must be great because it's with them, 250 grand. I'm going to make, you know, 1.5. I'm in. And I trusted everything with my eyes. I didn't trust my gut. How many times have we stood with someone in a bar, in the playground of your kid's school, and you're talking to them and your gut's going, something's not right here, you know? And how many times do we decide our eyeballs are going to win and not our gut? So I trusted my eyeballs. I got involved in this deal. Not only did it cost me $100,000 more, but I hadn't read the contract. And the contract, the people that I was involved with, they knew that they were tucking me over. So they had clauses in there that said I wasn't allowed to use their names in any of this. So when I actually went out and went, hey, I got involved in this because of so-and-so, even though I was right, and here's the dumb thing, even though I won the case because that was accurate, I'd gone against contractual obligation by naming their name, and then I got countersued because of it. I've always, from that point on, I've gone, all right, stop leading with your eyeballs, start trusting your gut. If it stinks, if it feels off, it more than likely is. That was my big lesson.
But Steve, you leaned in, but how did you recover from something like that? Because that could take your mental capacity. That could suck the life out of you. You could use it as an energy block and as an assumption. Well, that happened to me now. The next time it may happen to me again. How did you overcome that?
Well, as I said to you before, what was the third thing that most successful people do? They lean into the problem. I leaned in to go, where did this trip me up? Where did this bite me on the ass? Where did I lose track of this beast? And I realized I hadn't looked through the contract. Now I have a contract attorney.
That's what I was just going to say. He started hiring attorneys. Oh, that's where it goes wrong.
Luckily, he's what he calls a recovering attorney. So whenever I get a contract, I just go, great, I got someone to look over that. So I have someone look over that. I actually also have someone else look over the financing and the invoicing. So I never have to worry about that. If they say to me, hey, Gino's not paid the invoice, then I'll step in. But 9 times out of 10,
Well, you can revert right back to bouncer mode. You make a house call, right?
Absolutely can. Every single time.
No tucking you over. See, I learned two things on this show. I learned run up and tucking me over. So this is a win for me. So.
But I lean into it. I lean into it and I realize where it tripped me up, where I went wrong, where I went wrong, where the contract protected those people tucking me up went wrong. You know, so I lent in for the education and quite simply, I spent $350,000 gaining an MBA on how to get screwed in Hollywood.
That stings.
Now stings. On that point, 2 years later, I got a contract for Sir Elton John's Oscar party. And I passed that to my friend, couple of little things in there, sent that back to the Elton John group. They changed them. And I worked with them for 8 years, blissful harmony. So I got educated. Did I make my money back? Hell yeah. So that was my education.
Love that. As a practicing Catholic who's married to an Irish girl with six kids, I got to ask you, the Pope.
So the funny thing is, you know, I'm an Irish boy and I'm an Irish Catholic. So, you know, it was a case of we didn't go to church on a Sunday morning. We went to church on a Sunday morning, Saturday night. And Sunday night to help clear up the chairs. It's what we did. You know, your local priest was like part of the family and, you know, mm-hmm. he would just make house calls at any time. So as I grew up, I remember my family said, look, when you're 16, you can make the decision of whether or not you go to church. But until then, you will go 17 times a day. And so when I hit my 16th birthday, I stopped going to church. And I didn't like the way that it had become like a cult in my house. But as I grew up and I started doing so much work, and then one day I was asked to do some work over in Israel, and the people that I was working for gave me a tour, an incredible tour of some places that people don't normally get to go into throughout Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow. And it suddenly started coming back to me like this muscle memory. And then it was about another 2 years after that I was working in the Vatican. And so it all came back. So when I met the Pope, my dad's dead, but I kind of, I thought to myself, I'm here, Dad, and I kind of get it. So it was something pretty powerful for me.
Wow. Last question before we go to short answers. How do you scale a business? Because it seems as if you've got a lot of the systems in place. We talk about people, systems, and culture. You've talked mm-hmm. about culture and core values, but can you give us another couple tips on scaling your business?
Yeah, you've got to basically find out what you're weak at and stop doing it. You've mm-hmm. got to outsource. And it's very hard for entrepreneurs because entrepreneurs go, oh my God, give it to me, I'll do it. Okay? Mm-hmm. You can never scale that business when you've got what I call ugly baby syndrome. You know, you've got an ugly baby and you hold it so tight, you'll never let anyone else hug it because they can never love it like you and you end up suffocating it. So you've got to learn very early on, pass it out to people and pass out stuff with low liability. If you've got a project you're working on and you're scared it's going to go wrong, make one up and give it to someone you outsource to see what they come back with and slowly start giving them stuff that does create a liability if it goes wrong. But you've got to branch out. You've got to start trusting. You're going to get it wrong. People are going to fail on you because they never have as much involved as you. But you will start to build up those people that are good. And when you get good people that have got your culture, got your vision, got your fit, love them to death. Look after them. Cover them. You know, just every now and then just go, hey, go out to dinner with your husband. On me. Use the card. Just have a good... You've really got to make those people want to stay by allowing them to be free enough and smart enough to be able to leave.
Thank you.
So much truth in all that. You know, it's funny because as we've grown and we've scaled our business, I thought I was so good at everything. And it turns out I really suck at 99% of things. And the things that are the folks on our team actually create, I'm like, that's amazing. How the hell do you do that? So
yeah.
Been there experience.
Good on you.
So.
Smart. That's smart. Jake. And that's tough, isn't it? You are so right. You are so accurate, but well done for being smart enough to see.
No, it's easy. It's easy because it actually creates a better life for yourself. And you're like, you guys rock.
Yes. Yep. When you go let team. Go, it does.
Yeah. So, all right, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Gino, I know a lot of our listeners are wanting to take their multifamily investing business to the next level. I know that you've been hard at work helping Jake and Gino students do just that using our framework. Can you explain to the listeners how they can get our help?
Guys, we've been hard at work growing our community of like-minded investors, and the results of our members has been nothing short of incredible. We're looking to grow this amazing group. What we're looking for is those who want to follow our proprietary framework that we've created. Buy right, manage right, and finance right. Leverage our connections, education, and mentorship as ways to take your business to the next level.
So if you're interested in finding out more about how you can become a part of our amazing community, apply to work with us at jakeandgino.com/apply.
All right, we're back. So want to dive into personal habits a little bit, because we're going to pull a few more nugs out of you. Okay. Going to pull a few more nuggets out before we let you go here. Habits for success. Is there something you do on a daily basis, a weekly basis, that has become your rhythm, your cadence of accountability that we can share with the folks to improve their lives?
Yeah. Stop waiting until the weekend to do something, you know, for you. Like, I will literally go for dinner with my family on a Tuesday night. I will take my wife out for breakfast and maybe even a hotel on a Wednesday night. Why do we work to control and be the master of our own life by conforming to a 5-day work week and a 2-day off? It doesn't make sense. So I try to do things. I race motorcycles. So I will literally rent a track on a Tuesday afternoon, spend the entire afternoon going crazy on the racetrack, and then come back, because I've disrupted that was for me. Now I'll focus on what I do to be able to do that. You see, we don't play to work, you know. We work to be able to get the time to play, but you have to play. And that 5-2 ratio doesn't work for me. So do stuff during the week. Just literally just take your family out for a cool breakfast on a Wednesday morning, you know, and start working at 11 o'clock in the day. It won't wreck you, and you'll become appreciative. That's the second thing. Appreciate your life. You know, I'm with you now. I'm actually in my garage. I've got a load of motorcycles around me. This afternoon, I know I'm going for a motorcycle ride. I'm the luckiest bastard in the planet. I appreciate my life.
So congratulations to you. I'm giving you the award for the best answer for the habit question on the Jake and Gino show. I ask everybody that comes on this question, and I think that is the best answer we've got, because so many people, I'm truly looking for differences and stuff that people do. And I've never received this. So many people will be like, and not to hate on all of the good.
Yes.
I get up and I do this at 5 a.m. and it's like that. And it's like, okay, but Hal Elrod already wrote that book. So thank you, sir, for being authentic. And a follow-up to that question, okay, what has that done for your creativity?
Well, for a start, I love Hal Elrod, and I ain't doing jack shit other than sleeping at 5 a.m. in the morning.
Gino's got a bro now.
Makes two of us.
Yeah, so here's the funny thing. Have you ever kind of had something you're doing during the week, and it's kind of like taken two of your days? Maybe you're flying. Maybe the parents are staying with you, but all of a sudden your 5-day work week has been shrunk down to 3, and you're like, oh my God, I've only got 3 days to get all of this work done. And you do. And you suddenly realize that's because you're taking out the fluff. You know, you're actually for that time in a zone. So now I look at the hour and I go, okay, I'm going to spend an hour working on this project. However far I get, that hour comes, I go and make myself a cappuccino, and I'm on a different project. I'm not going back to it until a couple of days' time, and then I'll give it another hour. When you actually start restricting the time you spend on stuff, you're a lot more creative, because you know you're on the clock, you're working it, and you get in tuned with your inner flow. And Stephen Kotler talks about that. You really got to get to your zone, and that's what it's done for me. It's actually helped my creativity. And bearing in mind, when you're doing so much stuff for you, today I'm going on a motorcycle. This morning I'm talking with you. After this, I'm doing a live chat with all of my coaching clients. I'm pumped. I'm so creative. You know, 8 o'clock tonight, I may grab a pad and start making down some ideas. Shove the pad down, go back to it in the morning, get rid of a few of them because that's stupid under the smoke haze of my whiskeys. But, you know, maybe there's 2 creative ideas there that I can start implementing.
Now it's such a monotony buster too, because I feel like you get into this rhythm that's like the same every day. And if you don't throw something in there to break it up, you're not going to get the juices flowing. So that's why I think it's extremely powerful what you just said. Any books, I don't know if you're a book guy, but any book or anything you've listened to in the last year or so that added value to your life that you want to share?
Well, outside of Blue Fishing, The Art of Making Things Happen, there you go.
And the Art of Making, so I'm so screwed because I always wanted to do the Make It Happen book. And now it's like, I can't do it. It's done. It's taken. I can't do it, man. I can't.
There is. One of the things that did happen in COVID was I thought to myself, I've got to start reading a lot more. I've always given myself an excuse. Now I've got a reason. Now I've got an opportunity. So I actually did start reading a lot more. And one of the books that really, there were two books that really got me. There was Nair Eyal, E-Y-A-L, did a book called Hooked. He would make a great guest for your podcast. If you want me to, you know, hook you up, I'm happy to do that.
Hook him up. Let's make it happen.
Nair Eyal, calling you out, buddy, did a fantastic book on Hooked and how the internet hooks you and gets you to go down rabbit holes and how you can do that with your clients, okay? How you can get the engagement. And the other book, and it's quite an old book, but I promised Ryan I would read it and I never got around to it, Trust Me, I'm Lying. That is such a beautiful book. And in the world of mass distortion and distraction and media and fear and COVID and politics. And
sounds like a political book. That's what I was going to say.
It wasn't. It talks about how the media works for us. It works against us. But when you know how it plays, you can decide how you manipulate it. So it's a phenomenal book on as a company, as you, as businesses, how do you get your word out there? Well, first of all, understand what people are terrified of, you know? So, you know, it's a great book. Trust Me, I'm Lying by Ryan Holiday. It's a phenomenal book. And Nair Eyal, Hooked. And I've also been going through everything that my boy Jay Abraham wrote, because I love Jay Abraham.
He's
my
awesome.
Neighbor. He's my neighbor. In fact, I'm probably going to go and yell at him soon. Great books. And I don't want to be horrible, Jay. Jay was massive in the 80s and 90s when it was all about sales. And then the internet came along and kind of people went, oh, well, we don't do that. What Jay was talking about is old school. You're damn right. And today we need to bring old school back. And Jay's actually more relevant today than he was in the 80s and 90s, because today the one art we're losing that you can't download an app for is the ability to communicate with another human being. And that's going to be the thing that kind of like kills us.
Big shout out to Jay Abraham with his referral system. He's got a great referral system as far as that goes. And his trainings, he's a very intelligent human being. So maybe sometimes he just speaks over people sometimes and he can be, you know, he goes really into depth, but the value that he provides, just look him up, everybody. Jay Abraham. He was back in the 90s with Tony Robbins, an amazing speaker, and he's got great content. So check him out.
He actually interviewed me. He's interviewed me a lot of times, but I turned up at his place one day. One of his guests hadn't turned up and he was like, sit down, we're going to interview you. So he interviewed me and we actually shoved it on the front of my website. So you can actually see Jay Abraham interview me on stevedsims.com. He's a really great lad.
Just for fun, what kind of motorcycle do you drive and what kind of whiskey do you drink?
All right, so get ready to hate me. I have 12 motorcycles.
Dude, we don't hate over here for that. I say, fuck yeah, man. Get a 13th on you today, all right?
That's, well, 13's a bad number, so I should have to get two
14.
More. Yeah, but I'm really good at buying them and I'm terrible at selling them, you know, because I put them up for sale and then I get some plank turn up going, well, you know, can you do me a deal? And I'm like, yeah, fuck off before I give you a beating. So I'm really not very good at selling them. But I've got Harleys, I've got Ducatis, I've got a bunch of old school bikes, you know, from the 1960s, 70s and 80s, because they just give me a different feeling. So the way I look at it is I've got 12 motorcycles here, but I've got 12 different experiences because each one gives me a little. I've got one bike here that's got 0-60 in about 3 days, but it's got such an old school feel, so much feedback and vibration. That there's just something beautiful. Little open top helmet going around Mulholland with a couple of goggles on. It's just beautiful.
You got to, you know, and your wife worries about you going out in that thing because you're such a stud. All right. She's like, honey, come back soon. You know, we got to beat the chicks off you with that.
That's why I got the Harley. So she's always on it. Everyone on my social feed knows that there's a Claire. So no one's, you know, she's not worried.
Awesome. Last question. What project are you excited about right now? And we'll tie that into how folks can get a hold of you.
So we launched Sims Media, sims.media, because so many people are doing it wrong. Quite simply, they're listening to the old school. We focus on how to get your brand out there, how to personally brand your website, your tone, your vision, and how to amplify it across all social and digital ecosystem. So the big thing I'm focusing on at the moment is helping entrepreneurs get themselves out to the clients that they want not the clients that they're currently getting.
Awesome. G-Dad, give us a little recap here. What you got?
If you give me 2 minutes, he's got an amazing story. So I'm going to start out with the bricklayer carrying bricks not only to his dad.
That was a great story.
But to his granddad. And then he looks over to his granddad. And, you know, we all are our grandfathers. My grandfather, I have so many amazing stories. And when grandfather says, if you don't quit today, you'll be me tomorrow. That must have really hit Steve.
Still does.
Even at the age of 16. And he goes down that ladder, and then he looks at his dad and his granddad, and they both shake in agreement and says, Friday is your last day. From there, he's just trying to surround himself with wealthy people. He's asking the wrong questions. And that's what happens when you're an entrepreneur. You start asking the wrong questions. Once you start asking those right questions, everything starts to change. So from bricklayer to bouncer to building a business, and you know, asking those questions that I like about how come you're successful. It's amazing. You value your time differently. So I can see that Steve really values his time. He really hones in on the culture, hiring the right people. And he also leans into failure. And he's out there creating these amazing experiences for everyone else. And that's really what it's all about. My last question to Steve is, what are you watching on Netflix tonight?
Actually, funny enough, we literally just started watching something on Netflix. Yeah, but I like to watch factual stuff. So I'm actually watching it's kind of a docu-drama series on the last czars of Russia.
Oh, that is awesome. Yeah.
But I did watch something the other day which someone told me to watch that I trusted. And so I did watch it. Very interesting program called How to Be a Tyrant on Netflix. Very interesting on how these people manage to manipulate, starting from a position of very, you know, pleasing, very caring, smooth, very debonair. They always say that, you know, the psycho killers out there are real, you know, pleasant people to start with before they hack your head off. But it's an amazing program. It's a 6-part series, How to Be a Tyrant.
Love that. Hey, I got one more for you here. So I it took me a second until it hit, but what an amazing story. And you may hate the movie. People out there may hate the movie. They may love it. Good Will Hunting. Okay. You ever seen it?
Yeah. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. Dude, love it.
Go, you're in Hollywood. Go look up Gus Van Sant. Okay. Pull him in, get a writer and put this shit on paper. You got a movie here for you, man. The whole imagery of you going up on the thing, the Irish family, seeing the generations in front of you. I'll go see this thing. Go get this written down and get this movie produced, man. You're in the right town. You got the right story. You got the right attitude. You got the connections. This needs to be the next Good Will Hunting, man. You got it. So if I could add any value to your life, I hope that's it. This is the one that needs to be done in theaters in 2024. Let's check this out. So Steve, thank you so much. What a pleasure. Fantastic story. Love your energy. And keep making it happen, man.
Cheers.
Thanks, Steve.